Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Unlocking your sleep potential, brought to you by CleanMyBed.com.
So in the world, there is this very strange subspecies of humans called teenagers and adolescents who live a completely different life from the rest of us and probably have different challenges that they have to face. We've all been through it to some extent. We probably have kids that are either going into it, in the middle of it. And this is what the subject of this podcast is going to be all about: sleep and adolescence and how it affects them both academically and I guess with their moods and everything to do with their life, really. So a big welcome, as usual, to my co-host, Dr. Jill Warner, who's with us for our third episode of this sleep science issue. And again to Dr. Del Ray, who is the Director of Sleep Science here in Cape Town and also Senior Lecturer at the Division of Physiological Sciences at the University of Cape Town. And Del, I mean, you've got two teenagers, so this is pretty much in your wheelhouse perfectly. Are there special requirements or things to consider when it comes to adolescence and sleep?
Sure. It's a bit of a hornet's nest, and it's actually really exciting because in the next couple of years, we're actually doing a lot of research on sleep and adolescence. So it's something that's super close to my heart. And of course, I have my own experiment going on at home with my very own personal adolescence. So it's interesting. But I guess the first place to start with is sort of how much sleep do adolescents need, and why is it important? I'm always amazed at the fact that they actually need 8 to 10 hours of sleep per night. Maybe 7 on the absolute lower limit and maybe up to 12 on the upper limit. And I challenge parents of adolescents and adolescents themselves to think about, like, how often are you actually hitting that mark? Because from what I can see, the majority of the adolescents that we come into contact with are falling short. And there are a couple of reasons for that. So, I mean, adolescence is a time of great change. There's a lot of growth that's happening. There's a lot
First of all, what is adolescence? So we know exactly what we're talking about. What age group is it?
Okay, so essentially we consider adolescence to be the teen years. Okay. So from about sort of 13 through to about sort of 19 or so, it is some children actually enter adolescence a little earlier, because I suppose from a female perspective, you'd look at the age at which they begin menarche. So it can change a little bit, but it's that shift when your hormones start to move from your childhood hormones into your sort of more teen-related hormones.
Okay, yeah.
So I guess the way to think about adolescence, primarily, if you want to put a quick blanket over it, it's just think about high school kids.
Okay. Right. So you said that they need that sort of time. Is that similar sleep time in terms of kids younger than that? Because I've got a 6-year-old, for instance, and she sleeps, 11, 12 hours a night. That seems to continue right until that time. So the idea is they want to keep almost sleeping as much as they did as when they were even younger.
Yeah, absolutely. So that age range that you speak about, the duration requirement is something like 9 to 11 hours. So it shortens a little bit because there are slight changes in growth. But I think that what we find with adolescence is their lives become very full very quickly. There's a lot going on at school, extramurals, sport, social demands on their time. And so suddenly 24 hours doesn't seem like enough time to be getting in that 8 to 10 hours of sleep that may have been slightly easier for those junior school kids to be able to achieve. So from that perspective, even though the duration from pre-adolescence to adolescence shortens by about an hour, it's still a good chunk of time, 8 to 10 hours, that is required for optimal physical and mental health. And probably what we should consider is also why the timing of adolescents' sleep changes and why it's difficult for them to achieve that. So it's all very well, when your kids are young, you can say, right, 7 o'clock bedtime, and then it becomes an 8 o'clock bedtime. And then you try and get your adolescent that now needs to wake up at 6 for school. In South Africa, we have really early school start times. And that's when they don't have sport or orchestra practice in the morning. try and get them to go to bed at 8. It's practically impossible unless they're physically wiped out or they're sick. And there are a couple of reasons for that, and this is the big challenge. On one hand, when you enter adolescence, your body clock shifts. So your circadian rhythms delay a little bit and you become slightly more evening oriented. And then you couple with that, that there's a change in our sensitivity to something called sleep pressure. I'll explain what that is now, but together those two things make sure that it's biologically impossible for that adolescent to fall asleep early. And there's some dangers of parents trying to force them to sleep early, which will create later insomnia type patterns, which I'll also come to. But let's quickly chat about the sleep pressure thing, because I think most adolescents identify with being more of a night owl. That's definitely a period of time where you shift. But sleep pressure is something else. So I think about it like this. If you've had a great night of sleep and you wake up in the morning, or a couple of nights, and you wake up in the morning, you're full of pep. And if you think about it, your little hourglass, essentially, it's full of sand. And as the day goes by, the longer you're awake for, the sand trickles out. And the emptier that your hourglass becomes, so the longer you've been awake for, the greater the sensation of sleep pressure. It's actually linked to a buildup with a metabolic byproduct, adenosine, in the brain. So as adenosine builds up, we feel the sleep pressure more, and it gets to a tipping point at nighttime where your body says, that's it, I don't care what the time is, you need to sleep right now. Your hourglass is empty, adenosine's at a maximum, kindly go to sleep. And for whatever reason, with adolescence, this, it's either the sensitivity to the sensation of sleep pressure seems to be either delayed, or they don't get that same signal. So whereas we've been asleep been awake for maybe sort of 14 hours, 16 hours, and we starting to yawn and feel that we're ready for bed, they don't get that signal. Mm-hmm. So you couple that with a shift in their circadian rhythm, and 10 o'clock, very often, they'll still be wide awake and not even close ready to sleep. And so the mistake as a parent that we can make, or that adolescents can make for themselves, because we shouldn't assume that much level of control anymore, is that by forcing them to go to sleep early, they're going to be lying there, unable to sleep. And then, as you know, that can over time become a very stressful situation, because you think, oh my gosh, there's something wrong with me. Why am I not sleeping? But I can't put my light on because my parents might get angry with me and say that I'm supposed to be asleep. Mm. And then you create this anxiety around falling asleep, which can over time then create problems where a person then begins to believe that they actually have an insomnia type condition. And I actually see many adults who we can trace back the start of their sleep issues with being in adolescence, where they were trying to sleep too early, and then they created this belief that they are not good at falling asleep. And in fact, all that happened was they were just trying to sleep too early.
I guess nowadays there's extra distractions of cell phones and social media and that sort of thing, which adds to this problem, doesn't it? I mean,
yeah.
They're telling to their friends at 10 o'clock at night, it's normal.
Absolutely. So, I mean, this is a can of worms, and it's a difficult area for us to navigate, because for many of us sort of older parents, you know, we didn't grow up with the same level of technology. We didn't have the distractions of tech. And for sure, I mean, I don't know about anyone else, but my teens are glued to their devices because it's their lifeline. It's their way of communicating and getting information. And I mean, I've tried to withdraw that, and you just see that you do sort of a social isolation experiment. I mean, it's a terrible thing. So there are a couple of issues with the screens from the adolescent's perspective. One relates to the actual light coming off the devices. So your circadian system is incredibly sensitive to bright light and to short wavelength or blue light. And our devices are very good at emitting that kind of light. And because they're handheld, so we're specifically more concerned about phones and tablets than televisions, for example, because they're closer to our eyes. And it's the proximity of the light source to your eye that's important. And what that bright light does is it actually delays your body's production of the hormone called melatonin. So what's supposed to happen at nighttime, the sun goes down, and some hours after that, your body should start to produce melatonin. And if you're exposed to a lot of artificial light at night, and the devices emit enough light to actually suppress this melatonin, then you don't get that signal that it's time to sleep, and you inadvertently delay your bedtime. So from that perspective, sort of lying in bed on their phones, they may be relaxing, but they're actually also delaying their body's melatonin production. Mm. And then, of course, there's the social side of that as well. You might get messages that are terribly exciting. They might make you feel very sad or very isolated. And then you try and sleep with that kind of sort of emotions sort of swimming around in your head. And especially once the sun goes down, problems are much worse than they are when the sun goes up, when the sun is up. So we can create all sorts of other problems as well. In fact, they've even done studies where they've seen that some adolescents wake up multiple times in the night to message on their phones, to send or receive messages. So, I mean, a clear message here is that it's great to have the convenience and the social aspect of devices, but they absolutely cannot be in the room at nighttime. And if your child says, "Oh, but I need it because it's," your adolescent says, "I need it because it's my alarm clock," find another way to set other alarm clocks or set stronger boundaries, because using phones during the night is just, it's a horrendous way to destroy sleep.
Can I just ask you, Dale, because I mean, I remember myself when you're at that stage of adolescence, you also at that time very academically stressed because you're taking a lot of exams during that time period. And I personally remember sitting there with, at that point, would have been books, revising at midnight when you had an important exam the next day. I assume that now the adolescents are still doing that, not getting the message that they need to go to sleep, but also doing it with a screen instead, which is probably making it even worse.
Yeah, absolutely. And so there are a couple of ways that we can handle that, because, I mean, we have to, eyes wide open, take as part of our lives, and we need to live with it. So we can put filters onto our screens, and we can filter the blue light, and we can do it on all of our devices. And there's good evidence now to show that if you have these blue light filters activated between sunset and sunrise the next morning, you can significantly reduce the effect that that light is going to have on your melatonin. So bearing in mind that we have to be practical, might need to be studying on a computer or some similar device, let's look at using blue light filters. They're effective. And then the other thing, of course, is just having enough, what I call, you need time to disconnect at the end of the day. And so if you're going to be studying like a crazy person up until sort of 30 seconds before bedtime, close down your laptop and hop into bed and hope for a good night's sleep. Good luck with that, because you're going to have a very busy racing mind for a while. So you need time to decompress and chill. And it sounds awesome. Who doesn't want license to decompress and chill? But for adolescents to actually build that into their day is a really healthy sleep strategy, sort of disconnect from everything that they're doing and just have some time to just to be a human and to think. It's tricky when we're cramming for exams, and that's a different talk altogether because that can have an impact, of course, on your sleep.
So you talked about the fact that they have this delayed sort of circadian rhythm. But the reality is they still have to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. Are you then accept that there are times when they're just not going to get enough sleep?
Sure. So actually, when we speak about nap licenses, adolescents is another group that get a nap license because of the fact that it's through no fault of their own that very often that an early bedtime is unachievable, and an early wake up time is inevitable. Exactly. And so the only outcome is that they're going to have a reduced sleep opportunity. So suddenly there's only 7 hours at which they can actually get some decent sleep at nighttime, and they're falling at least an hour, if not 2 or 3 hours, short of their target. And so in those cases, we would absolutely be proponents of napping for adolescents in the afternoon, just to help revive them and make sure that they're not too chronically sleep deprived.
Mm. So, I mean, we know that for those many people listening to this will have these teenagers, and they'll wonder why on a Saturday morning they'll sleep until lunchtime, which seems impossible for us as you get older. I mean, I imagine, is that a catching up scenario, or is that just a case of, well, they have an opportunity to sleep, that's what they need, therefore let them sleep? Because I know as parents, you get frustrated by that. We're like, we should get up, we don't have to sleep until lunchtime. But actually, it sounds like that might be a good thing.
Yeah. So they're doing catch up sleep of the highest order. It is absolutely necessary. I say this with caution, though, because we generally don't love catch-up sleep. And the reason being is that when you keep changing from short to long to short to long, there's really clear evidence now that, for example, 5 days of short sleep can have huge consequences on your metabolism. It creates absolute havoc, basically. And so people say to me, but does it matter if I'm doing my 5 or 6 hours in the week because I'm paying it all back on the weekend? Don't worry about it. It's like, yes, you may be hitting your weekly target, but the way that you're getting there is pretty ugly. And the metabolic consequences down the line are going to be felt. So that person will over the time creep into unexplained weight gain. And then ultimately as an adult, you've got to watch now for insulin resistance and then the development of hypertension as well. So having this catch-up sleep strategy, it's a short-term solution for adolescents as they're going through that period. But as soon as they can try to stabilize that sleep pattern into something that is just more consistent, is absolutely super important.
So they almost need to become adults. They want to become adults as much as possible. So that sleep time is necessary. But as you say, you don't want to encourage it. When you say they need to get into a more stable sleep pattern, are you talking about the fact that after adolescence, they need to start moving into that area? Mm-hmm. Or while they're adolescents, mm-hmm. they need to not wake up at 11 o'clock in the morning, have a more way that you talked about having set times you go to bed at night and set times that mm-hmm. you wake up. You mm-hmm. want to get closer to that even during adolescence.
I think you want to start that pattern even during adolescence. Okay. So, I mean, obviously, every now and then you're going to, I think about it, are you not going to eat the chocolate? Or are you going to have the chocolate? You can't have the chocolate every day, but every now and then you can have the chocolate, right? So you can extend your sleep every now and then when you absolutely really need to. But for the most part, you want to try and improve that consistency earlier on. Sometimes we find that with some adolescents that have extremely delayed clocks, then helping to shift their clock a little bit more towards an acceptable moderate evening type or even an either type can be done very effectively with the correct use of something like melatonin supplementation and also light exposure. So using lights very strategically can help to better synchronize that adolescent's body clock to the light-dark cycle. And so hiding away in the darkness of their room in the daytime and especially in the early morning is a terrible strategy because their body is still then producing melatonin. So you want to have, as much as they hate it, little moles, but you want those curtains open, bright lights, squash down that melatonin, and then in the evenings minimize ambient light to try to help encourage their bodies to produce that melatonin a little bit earlier.
When you talk about melatonin, so I'm digressing slightly here, but when you're asleep in the morning and the light and the sun comes up and your eyes are still closed, is your body sensing light even though it can't see it?
Yeah, you definitely do get a little bit of that. I mean, I know some people feel that they're more sensitive. I know my mom describes her eyelids as being paper thin. but even with your eyes closed, you are still getting a sense of that light that's coming through, and that signals going to your brain to a specific gland to shut off the melatonin production.
Mm. So when you talk about the teenagers, I love the idea of the moles. That's a brilliant example. But opening those curtains actually will reduce that melatonin, then it should wake them up a little bit.
Yeah,
easier.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I have a troll rather than a mole, but Dale, one thing that interests me is, and I'm sure you must experience this, obviously when you do try to get an adolescent out of bed at 6 o'clock in the morning, they can be rather moody and difficult. Is that just because they're tired, or is there actually a physiological effect of not having slept well, having a difference on effect on mood?
So it's probably a little bit of both. Absolutely. I mean, nobody, no matter adolescent, old person, young person, bring us out of bed too early and that transition into wakefulness, it's ugly. And we're not always the best versions of ourselves. So there's something called sleep inertia. And this is what you need to overcome in the morning so that you can feel peppy and ready to go. And with adolescents, that sleep inertia just takes a little longer. So it may be that instead of taking 15 or 20 minutes, it could take 30 to 60 minutes. And so you just want to be gentle around that time. Don't ask any hard questions. Don't push any buttons. Just let them transition slowly. Don't expect great conversation or anything like that. So I think just to be understanding of that. But the other part to that relates to chronic sleep deprivation. And so there are two things happening during adolescence. Sort of the frontal lobe is maturing at a great rate, but it's nowhere nearer at the level that it would be for an adult. And a lot of our emotional regulation is controlled by this frontal cortex. And so on two levels, adolescents have this development which is happening. So they don't have the same level of emotional regulation and therefore appear moody, for example. But on top of that, when a person is sleep deprived, the area of the brain that is often affected is also that frontal cortex. And so then also your emotional regulation goes out of the window. So they've got literally a double whammy there, which in part explains why if you have a sleep deprived teen, you're going to have the double trouble when it comes to that moodiness.
Yeah, that's hectic. I always think with teenagers, and to some extent as adults, we kind of look at them, there's some elements of frustration sometimes with them. But there's no doubt that the stress that they feel in many different aspects, not just academic, mm-hmm. but also social stress and the stress of what are they going to do in life, all that sort of things. How much does stress, first of all, affect the quality of their sleep? And in other words, and then if they're not getting enough sleep, how does that in turn create more stress?
Yeah, that's a great question, and it's so real. So a lot of our sleep, when we sleep, we spoke earlier, we've spoken previously about slow wave or deep sleep, but the one thing we haven't considered yet is REM or rapid eye movement sleep. So that's a phase of sleep where your brain is incredibly active. It looks like a awake brain. Your eyes are darting around, but your skeletal muscles are immobilized so that you can't move and act out what's happening in your head, because we think we do a lot of our dreaming in REM sleep. But REM sleep is actually critical for emotional recovery. It's really important for your psychology, for managing your stress, your mood, etc. And if we don't get sufficient REM sleep, we don't have that same level of emotional regulation or control, or our stress can sort of ramp up to out of control levels. And so for adolescents who have this sort of weird time where, as you've mentioned, they've got a whole lot of stresses going on and they're very real, you need sleep, and you need specifically REM sleep to be able to process and contextualize all that's going on so that
it's
you can...
It's almost like the filing system, isn't it, REM sleep, where you're putting everything in a file.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So being able to contextualize things so that you can make sense of why you feel a certain way. Why did this person trigger me? Why, you know, what happened in this situation? Why did it go wrong? There's a lot of introspection, which looks incredibly self-absorbed in adolescence, but it's actually very important for their growth and development and maturity that is still to come. And so when an adolescent has high levels of stress and they don't get sufficient sleep, then they're not dealing with this as they should be. And that obviously is problematic. But then it's a vicious cycle, because the more stressed you are, the more it impacts your sleep. So your sleep becomes lighter and more disturbed, more fragmented. And that's a really poor quality of sleep. And once that happens, then up goes your levels of worry and anxiety. And you're sort of stuck in a bit of a rut. So in fact, we often see the emergence of depression or anxiety during adolescence at a time where your circadian system is stressed, your sleep homeostasis stressed to the max. And so we actually are seriously considering that this is a time that we actually have to support sleep in adolescence as much as possible, so that we minimize the chance that they then develop stress or anxiety or depression conditions, which will then potentially carry on into adulthood.
Wow. So, and there's a lot of responsibility on sleep, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I think we almost underestimate it with teenagers. In fact, we're often critical of teenagers because of it.
Yeah.
I hope your kids understand what a good mom you are, because just talk about the cognitive changes that happen if you don't get enough sleep. I'm hoping that we're talking here to adults, but hopefully there are some teenagers and adolescents listening to this who think, well, I can get away with my 6 hours or 5 hours. What actually happens if you don't get enough sleep in terms of your cognitive ability and your ability to learn?
So loads of research has been done, especially by psychologists, actually, who've been looking into the connections between sleep and cognition for many, many years. It's a well-established area. And it's very clear that with acute sleep deprivation, we impact our cognition. So what does that mean? That means we impact our ability to think, and it can relate to flexibility, to learning, to the ability to be creative, to be productive, to be able to multitask, for example. These are all examples of cognition. And we value these things because, unfortunately, as adolescents, you're judged on all of this because you're at school and you're trying to perform academically. So acute sleep deprivation impairs many of these processes, whereas if you've had good, solid sleep, you really are doing yourself huge favors in terms of making sure that your ability to think and perform academically is at the highest possible level. So a really important component of cognition that means a lot, I think, to adolescents is memory, because this is a period of life where you're doing a huge amount of learning and you're having to show that you have the ability to give back this what you've learned in terms of managing tests and assignments, etc. And so when we sleep, we embed memory. It's one of the functions of sleep, which is absolutely critical. And so without sufficient sleep, we don't embed that memory particularly successfully. And so, I mean, thinking about your filing system example there, a lot happens in the day. We've got information lying all over the place and it gets ordered and organized in such a way that we're able to retrieve it when we need to. So for adolescents, this is obviously a hugely important component. There's a lot of talk.
So essentially what you're saying is whatever they're, for instance, if they're cramming for exams, mm-hmm. they're not getting enough sleep. That cramming is almost like slightly wasted because they're not retaining
yeah,
and filing away not. The stuff they're learning. So yeah. it's counterproductive in a way.
Yeah. They may have a short-term ability to access that memory, i.e. for the exam, but you quiz those kids on that content 6 months later and it's gone.
Yeah.
So it's absolutely, it's completely hopeless. So there's two things to consider. There's, do I do an all-nighter to shove as much information in so that I can write the exam? And you need to have a good hard think about that, because perhaps you're going to be able to get yourself through that exam, but you're doing yourself no favors in terms of like long-term retention. And the other thing is that if you're going to go into an exam sleep deprived, you will almost certainly not perform as you should do. And so we'd much rather see that rather close the books and leave out a section and get those extra few hours of sleep and do really well in the sections that you did actually sort of study for. So that's really important.
Yeah.
Dale, can I just ask you, because it's something I've heard and I'm not sure whether it's true or not, but when we're talking about filing what we've learned during the day, memorizing, storing and recovering, is it true that if the thoughts that you've had prior to going to sleep are negative ones, depressing ones, that those are the sort of effects that you find are being processed during the REM sleep?
Yeah, almost certainly there are. I think you'll find that whatever you take to sleep with you is sort of what's important to you at that point in time. And so if there are dark or negative or worrying thoughts, then that is certainly something that your body will be processing throughout the nighttime. And then that often does go into your REM type sleep. And for some people, it can then just mean that they might have quite disturbing dreams or unpleasant dreams. And it's not to say that it's a good or a bad thing. It is actually just your body processing. In fact, I would say that if you're having a lot of disturbing, unpleasant dreams, it may well be a signal to yourself that all is not well. And perhaps there are things that you actually need to pay attention to during the daytime that that maybe are a little bit hard to deal with.
Which I think is terribly topical at the moment when we consider how many adolescents are thought to be depressed, in inverted commas, and whether some of the aspects we've been talking about here, the stresses on them, are causing the problems not only due to the stress, but because of their sleep not being appropriate.
Mm-hmm. And it almost feels worse now being a teenager than it was 10, 15 years ago when there wasn't all these distractions. I mean, as a sort of final question for me, when you talk about dreams, I'm again digressing, but I always thought that dreams mean nothing. They're just kind of random stuff happening in your brain. So you're saying that a disturbing or a bad dream or a nightmare actually has some relevance in terms of what you're dealing with. In other words, can you prevent nightmares versus happy dreams?
Yeah. So I'm just going to put a quick disclaimer here. I'm a physiologist, not a psychologist. And so psychologists would hate me for discussing dreams, probably. And I'm definitely, by no stretch of the imagination, an expert on dreams. But what I do understand quite clearly is that when we dream, we are processing, and we are processing information, and it can be emotional and sort of information and feelings and things that have happened and whatever. And very often, so if we've had a monster argument with somebody, for example, during the daytime, and perhaps we didn't ever talk to anybody about it because it was really, really upsetting, then sometimes you do find that that will then infiltrate into your dreams, because it's in your body's way or your brain's way of dealing with that and trying to unpack everything that happened. So it's not to say that that you should be concerned necessarily about the content, or that you should take the content to mean absolutely X, Y, or Z. But definitely it can be an indication of things that are at play on your mind, that it's unfinished business. That's kind of the way I think about it.
Yeah. Fascinating. Dr. Delroy, thank you very much for your time. I know that I'm going to be treating, well, I've got a couple of teenagers that have passed teenage years, but I have another one coming into it. So I think it's I think the message to me, that making it very clear, is that we need to be a little bit kinder to our adolescents, because sleep is an as important part of their lives and actually is more important to them than we believe, I think, inherently. So thank you very much. And Dr. Jill Warner, thank you much for your time again.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.